This episode of Therapist Connect podcast is sponsored by WebHealer, the number one website provider for private practice therapists. Serving the community for 20 years, WebHealer offers a non-technical and fully supported online platform helping therapists use the internet to grow their practice. Whether you need a website, a booking system, or even a secure email address for your practice, WebHealer can help. Contact WebHealer today via www.webhealer.net and use the coupon Therapist Connect for £100 off their Do It For Me service.
Welcome to the Therapist Connect podcast, a podcast for therapists by therapists.
Hello, my name is Dr. Peter Blundell, and today for the Therapist Connect podcast, I'm interviewing Lucia Sarmiento Verano, who is a humanistic psychotherapeutic counsellor who lives and works in Oxford and is also part of the Radical Therapist Network. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you? It's lovely to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you finally.
Yeah. I'm good, thank you. Good, that's good to hear. It's really nice to meet you. You know, when you feel like you know someone because you interact with them, and then you think, oh, we've never actually spoken before. So,
yeah, I realized that today. I feel like I know you, but I really don't.
You do now.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay. So this is going to be a joy for me because I'm going to find out, I get to ask you lots of questions and find out a little bit more about you. Because I've read a little bit and I've seen obviously your tweets and things like that. But what I don't know is kind of what drew you to being a therapist in the first place. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I consider this journey to be really, really long because I consider the beginning of my journey when I began therapy about 12, 13 years ago, because I was in a very bad place. I had depression quite severely, and I started seeing someone because I was alone in Europe and I felt like I had no other choice but to try and feel a bit better. It was really intense and intensive. I had group therapy, individual, twice a week. And I didn't really imagine that I would end up being a therapist myself. But I guess I could have predicted it a little bit because I enjoyed it so much. I mean, it was really hard. But yeah, the safety of the space, the relationship that one gets to have in the therapeutic space, to me felt very special and very needed. Mm. And then I decided I wanted to become a therapist when I went through several years of group therapy and I could experience that relationship with other people that wasn't just the therapist. And it was absolutely magical. It completely rewired me to want to live again and you know, want to connect with people again. So that's when I decided it, and I started my training 4 years ago now.
Wow. So it sounds like in both of those examples, the personal therapy and the group therapy, that it was all about those healing relationships and that bond with other people that was so powerful.
Yeah. Spaces to feel safe and be able to explore things we don't feel like we can in other places. Yeah.
That safe space to kind of be ourselves, really. And so that led you to starting your therapist training, which you said was four years ago now. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because I know you trained as a counsellor, but then you've kind of moved on to do some other training now as well, haven't you?
Yeah, so I trained as a humanistic counsellor. My training was a mix between transactional analysis, gestalt, and person-centered. And I qualified a year ago now, exactly. And then I continued on the training to become a psychotherapist, and now I'm due to qualify next year, which is the same modalities. It's just a bit longer.
Yeah, and a bit more in-depth.
Yeah.
So how have you found your training then in both of those examples? How's that been?
It's been a journey. It's been hard in different ways. First of all, the amount of self-exploration that we needed to go through. I wasn't really expecting that. I guess I had an idea about that, but one does not really know what to expect until, you know, I'm in there. The hardest part for me was doing that in a big group, in a group of people that I hadn't met before. And then as I went on with my training, and especially after I qualified and I started practicing and I started reading how other people practice and, you know, talking a lot more with people that have been qualified for a long time and getting into anti-oppressive practice, I started questioning a lot of the theories and the ways to practice that we're being taught. So that's been really hard for me in this past year and a half, to have to continue training, but then having to, in a parallel movement, develop my own way of thinking, which doesn't necessarily correspond to the mainstream training.
Yeah.
It's been a challenge.
I imagine it is. There was a couple of things that stood out to me there when you were talking. One was when you were talking about doing your personal development, but in a big group. I remember when I did my training, we had 26 people in our group with two facilitators. So I just had flashbacks then when you were talking of remembering being in such kind of big groups with not knowing people very well, and that requirement to kind of explore yourself. It's quite intense. And I see students kind of go through that. We don't have groups that big on our course at John Moores University. But then the other bit that you were talking about there in terms of learning about an approach and a modality or multiple approaches, but then also trying to have a critical eye and lens over that. And I think all courses should be open to that and to be having those conversations. But I can understand how sometimes that might, for a student, that might be quite jarring sometimes, not always being able to challenge maybe some of the things that are being taught.
Yeah, it is difficult, especially because we're still being not judged, but we need to qualify. And for that, we might come across trainers or markers that will not take it very well if we criticize some of the things or we show that we don't agree fully. So we need to be careful with that.
And that's a really difficult thing to navigate, isn't it? I mean, personally, I always feel like I would mark students higher if they were critically engaging with a topic and kind of looking at it from different perspectives. But I appreciate that it's a personal thing, isn't it? And other people might not approach it in that way. So that's really difficult as a student. And I appreciate that you go through that journey on social media, don't you? So you talk a lot about anti-oppressive practice and power dynamics and things like that on social media. So I suppose you have some form of outlet for it. If not, you can't do it all on the courses that you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. I'm eternally grateful for social media.
Twitter all the way.
Yes.
So given that kind of difficult path, I suppose, that you're traveling at the moment, how would you describe your therapeutic approach? Have you come to a position with it at the moment of work where how you would describe it?
I think it's in works. I'm still going to evolve and change, but coming from the basics that I learned in my training, which are Rogerian mostly, I'm trying to develop what I call an anti-oppressive approach, which is acutely aware of power dynamics between client and therapist, but also in the client's life and different ways in which the person might be maybe feeling silenced or oppressed and also naming all those dynamics. So we don't run the risk of individualizing issues or blaming the client for things that might be outside of their control. Because I do strongly believe, and I think that's what's missing in a lot of trainings, that social context and social structure have a real big impact on a person's well-being, emotional well-being. And it's important to name that in therapy, even if we can't fix it within therapy. Yeah.
There's something about that, and I think actually we've had this conversation on social media and on a similar type of topic, making those things that are happening or implied actually very explicit, naming them and acknowledging that they actually exist. And I think when you were talking before about that idea of individualizing every problem, almost through therapy, we can reinforce some of those structures by kind of saying the onus is on you, the client, to sort that out. But actually, there's a lot of issues and structures that the client won't necessarily have power or control to change.
Exactly. And what I've been hearing a lot is people feeling either guilty or that like there's something wrong with them because they're feeling that way, because they're feeling low or they're feeling hopeless about the situation when, well, I've heard this phrase and I'm sure I'm not going to do it justice, but it's something like we can't feel well in a society that's ill, you know, if the social structure is ill.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we had this conversation on social media, I think, around sometimes community organizations and people who work in other kind of spheres outside of therapy sometimes have a greater awareness around some of those issues than therapists necessarily. I mean, I don't know about all different types of training, but I know that there are lots of trainings that are limited that don't even look at that kind of perspective during their training. So I think it's really important that we talk about it. And I also really appreciate the awareness raising that you try and do on social media around some of those discussions and some of those issues.
Thank you. It's nice to know it's appreciated.
It is. Absolutely.
Sometimes fear I'm like the angry little therapist because that raising all these issues.
I think for me, it's one of those things on social media where there is a lot of opinions thrown around, but I think sometimes you might not see people maybe commenting or liking, but I think that they're out there and it gives people thought to take away and reflect. So I think there might be work being done that isn't always seen on social media, because I know sometimes it can feel like tweeting out to a kind of an empty void. Nobody replies. It reminds me of large personal development groups where you speak and kind of nothing comes back, you know. But I think people are listening and taking notes, so don't stop.
Okay. Thank you.
Moving a little bit away from kind of what we were talking about then, but if there was any kind of people thinking about entering training as a therapist, is there any advice that you would give to them around entering either the profession or entering therapy training?
There's probably loads of advice I could give, but because it's really a very obscure path. We don't know much. I mean, I didn't know much about therapy and the different modalities and options for training before entering training. So maybe I would have done a lot more research than I did before entering training about the modalities, for example, and what they really are like and what's the philosophy behind them and if they go with my values, etc. And also about different training organizations. For example, I did not know what the difference between BACP accredited training and UKCP accredited training was until I started. And that might cater to different needs for different careers. So that's really important. The other thing, maybe I would have wanted to know a lot more about my training institution's way of doing things and how it compares to others, to see if that corresponds to what I'm expecting from an institution, or if I'm going to feel welcome and safe in there. Yeah.
I think that's some really good advice. And I think, I know when I entered my own training, almost maybe the perception from the outside is you do a qualification and you become a counselor or a psychotherapist, but actually the routes to get there are so varied, you know, and there's so many different types of approach and organization that you can join. So I think doing some research and trying to have a good understanding about that is a really, I think it's a really good idea, actually.
Sorry.
It's okay.
I would probably, the best way of doing that is talking to qualified counselors about their training. Yeah.
That's hopefully how some of these podcasts help people actually. It's kind of actually having a listen about some of the routes that people took in their training, because it's, without that, I think it's quite difficult to navigate, I think. So I'd agree with that. What are kind of the rewards and the challenges that you've had then so far over the course of your career as a therapist?
Over the course of my still very short career as a therapist. Well, one of the first challenges was actually setting up in private practice, because I don't know about other trainings, but I didn't have any guidance on that. So I had to look for workshops, which were very, very good, actually, the ones I attended, and different bits of information here and there. It's quite hard to find really precise information about taxes, for example, or insurances and different options, etc. So that was a lot of work at the beginning, and I'm still learning. Then I suppose I'm not alone when I say, when I just qualified, I still didn't know what I wanted to specialize in or what client type I preferred, or because a lot of people say, well, I've heard people say we can be generalists, you know, people work like that, but I'm not too sure about that. I mean, I don't think we should choose something, but I think it's natural that we all have different interests depending on our own experiences as human beings. So I think it would have been a good idea to know more about that before starting my own private practice. And the rewards, well, just a job. I'm not jaded yet about I'm recently qualified. I really, really enjoy working with clients. It's extremely rewarding. And I think I mentioned right earlier that the part I enjoy the most about this work is actually seeing people find their voice when their feelings or their experiences have been minimized or denied, and then after a while in therapy they start being more and more sure about how they feel and how they think, and not doubting themselves. That's really, really good to see.
It's lovely, isn't it? And it's that acknowledgement that it's always been there, but it's just getting an opportunity to be expressed or owned a little bit more. That is a wonderful part of being a therapist. What do you think is the biggest challenge that we face as a profession from your point of view?
I think we're very, very tied to tradition. I think we're still trying to build on the very first foundations of psychotherapy more than 50 years ago. And yes, we need to learn where we come from and the theories underlying our work, but we could have gone so much further now. And in my experience of training, we're still kind of focusing a lot in how they used to do things. Which, for example, if we take Roger's person-centered approach, it's a great way of working with people to, you know, hold what they need to bring, to help them feel safe and to explore their experience. But we can't be using that theory as a solution for every therapeutic issue, especially if we start working with dynamics of power and oppression, if we start working with, you know, the social context, because I think I recently tweeted that the Rogerian approach has also always been used by racist people in actively racist ways. So it's not a solution. I think we should be thinking much further ahead now.
And I think we've had this conversation on social media about all of those therapeutic approaches, the history of them, and who wrote them all need examining through a critical lens. And if we don't do that, then we're falling short of considering where we could go with counseling and psychotherapy for the future.
Yeah, and I feel there's a lot of fragility in the profession around examining the problematic foundations of it. There's a lot of fragility around the idea of doing harm potentially as therapists. A lot of people cannot accept that. So it becomes really difficult to say things like a lot of Jung's theories were racist. So people will attack others for saying that. And that's what I mean by we're still too attached to tradition, I guess.
And it's interesting, isn't it? Because for me, I feel like a lot of that discussion, it's conversation, you know, it's reflecting on those ideas. It's challenging each other to think about things in a different way. But if we can't even have those conversations safely with each other, then how are we ever going to change or change our views or influence each other in different ways?
I would say that's the biggest problem with our profession right now.
This might kind of follow on from this a little bit, actually, this next question. So you've recently announced on social media that you're an assistant disruptor for Race Reflections, which I love that name of that kind of role, I suppose it is. But could you tell people who are listening who may not know about Race Reflections and what this kind of role involves with them?
Yeah, so Race Reflections is a very recent company, it's a startup. The founder is Ghislaine Kinwani. Look her up if you don't know her. And she is a psychologist and an expert on critical race, critical psychology, and she focuses on race and racism. So the idea of this company is we offer memberships to individuals and to companies as well, for anti-racist development and for learning about all the dynamics behind oppression and racism. And we don't only offer material about on it in the form of articles and talks and seminars, but also we're trying to offer spaces for group reflection and for support as well. So we always have events running monthly, group discussions, anti-racism groups, support groups, and different types of talks and materials for members. So, yeah, that's Race Reflection.
Yeah.
And my, my role within it. I was going to forget that. So I recently started working as an assistant disruptor, as you said. And for me, my role entails delivering some of the training mm-hmm. producing some of the training and also doing research to develop more training and more products for us, and also different bits and bobs, because it's a small company, so we all kind of are multitask a bit of business development and communication with customers.
Fantastic. So it really, I mean, it's quite innovative and there is lots going on. I'm on the mailing list at the moment, so I kind of see kind of the different events and things like that that are happening, which is absolutely fantastic. Now, just to, as well as your training and your work with Race Reflections, you're yes. also a member of the Radical Therapist Network. I don't know where, I'm not sure where you find the time to do all of these things.
I am not sure either. I am at the moment working almost 7 days a week.
Yeah.
But it's all so fascinating and needed. So, yeah, I'm happy with that for now. So the Radical Therapist Network. It was founded last year at the beginning of the first lockdown. And it's a space for counselors and psychotherapists to educate ourselves, to support ourselves through, we have different support groups as well. We have regular meetings, we have peer support, supervision, and we also organize events like talks and workshops and seminars for therapists around subjects of oppression. So either working with gender, working with sexual orientation, or working with marginalized groups, racism, or other kinds of oppression. And it's all to help us develop an anti-oppressive praxis in our work. So it is all done voluntarily.
Yeah.
We're all working voluntarily. And at the moment, I think the membership is closed, but it's going to open again in the future. The time we regroup and we reorganize some things. But it's an extremely exciting project, and I really hope more people join us, because there's loads of incredibly experienced, knowledgeable therapists in the network that are willing to share their knowledge mm-hmm. with other members and support each other in this anti-oppressive journey, which is a hard journey, because we need to put into question so many of the things we've learned about ourselves and the world, and we can feel really vulnerable in this journey. So having a community to do it is really good.
That's fantastic. And your passion comes through when you're talking about that. But I also saw a video from different members from the Radical Therapist Network at the conference for the psychotherapists and counselors for social responsibility, and I think everyone's passion kind of came through on that video, talking about why they joined that network and kind of what it meant to them. So it sounds like it's going from strength to strength from what I can see, which is really good to see.
Yeah, thank you. I think everyone's working really hard for it.
Yeah.
And it's a really lovely community.
It seems that, and I know that a lot of the members are kind of very passionate and for advocating for it on social media as well. I'm coming to the end of my questions, but my last question is kind of, what have you got planned next? But I feel like I don't want to ask you that question, because you've got so much on already. I'm thinking surely there can't be more things that you want to do soon.
Well, yes, there is actually. other than my work at Race Reflections, I am working on new products, new courses. I believe is going to be especially geared towards psychotherapy. Mm-hmm. So that would be really interesting. With the Radical Therapist Network, I'm working on a workshop I'll be co-facilitating with Sage Stefano around being white and other, is called. Mm-hmm. is for people that are white or white passing and come from either mixed heritage or colonized cultures. So it's going to be an 8-session exploration of our experience of oppression and of white privilege in order to become better anti-racists. And in the future, after I finish my, I have to finish my dissertation for next year and pass my VIVA. And after I do that, I hope to continue into a PhD to study the dynamics, the psychosocial dynamics of racial mixing in Latin America under the colonial. I don't have my wording just yet, but under the colonial coloniality of power.
Yeah. Well, that sounds absolutely fantastic. And I knew when I asked the question that you'd have other plans and ambitions, because you just seem so passionate and motivated in your work. So it sounds really, really exciting. And I wish you the best of luck with it. And thank you for all the work that you do in terms of raising the profile of anti-oppressive practice, particularly on social media, because I think it is really important. And I think it's really important that we're trying to always have that conversation and raise awareness around those issues. So thank you so much. It's been lovely to meet you and chat to you properly.
Yes, thank you so much, Peter. It's been lovely.
No problem.
Thank you for listening to the Therapist Connect podcast. Go to www.therapist-connect.com for more discussions and debates.
This episode of Therapist Connect podcast is sponsored by WebHealer, the number one website provider for private practice therapists. Serving the community for 20 years, WebHealer offers a non-technical and fully supported online platform helping therapists use the internet to grow their practice. Whether you need a website, a booking system, or even a secure email address for your practice, WebHealer can help. Contact WebHealer today via www.webhealer.net and use the coupon Therapist Connect for £100 off their Do It For Me service.